Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group, NCA, in Zuchus of Rivka Bela, Bas Nechama Shifra, and in honor of Rabbi Tramp.
Today we're going to be looking at the halachas of Tvila, of Ar Amida, which is the 18th chapter, Siman Yud Ches, in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Of course, this is very fortuitous that it is the 18th chapter, because one of the names for the Amida, the standing prayer, is Shmone Esrei, which means 18, because of the 18 blessings it used to have. Today is 19, and there's a debate as to what the 19th one is, whether it's V'la Mal Shenim, about the heretics, or about Shema Kolenu. But nonetheless, this is the 18th chapter of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. This is a rather long chapter, so there are 21 different halachas or sivim in this case, and we're going to divide this into two parts. So in our first part, we're going to focus on four basic concepts. They are focus, timing, position, and direction. Before we start, a little bit of background. Why was this instituted? Because it's important to appreciate that when we use the word tefillah, prayer, when we use the word davening, that although we use it colloquially to refer to the entire davening, when we open a siddur from the beginning of brachos until the end of Shir Shel Yom, but technically speaking, this term relates specifically to the Amida, to the standing prayer. This is the central part of davening around which everything else was built. The Kriyas Shema is not davening. It is placed next to it, adjacent to it, because of the brachos, the Kriyas Shema, which are thematically connected to the Shema and to the Amida. But they're really, the Amida is the central part of prayer, which is to be done three times a day. Where does this come from, and when was it instituted? So we're going to go according to the notion of the Rambam, which is that the Torah requires us to daven. The Torah commands us to pray, to serve Hashem with our entire hearts. But that was, in a certain sense, in flux, in an organic state for most of human history, from the times of creation of the world until the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, and people would express this in their own ways. So this is the idea that organically Moshe Rabbeinu would say to Hashem, Kel no refonala, about his sister Miriam, please heal her. Chana would turn to Hashem and plead to have a child. Everybody used their own words, their own time, in their own way, to express their specific needs. Some people chose different times of day, like Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, morning, afternoon, and evening. But the idea was that it was more organic, there wasn't a specific structure, the timing was more in flux. However, after 70 years of the exile in Babylon, the committee, which was put together, this governance board called the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the men of the Great Assembly, decided and realized that the assimilation was so rife in the nation of Israel after those 70 years of exile, and people were so dysfunctional in terms of their ability to be able to coalesce a organic expression of praise to Hashem, they said, we need to institutionalize, to regulate this as well. And they therefore created the Shmone Esrei, the 18 blessings, and they created brachos. And many of the things that our siddur is reflective of is the structure given by the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, realizing that through the decentralization of leadership, there needs to be a centralized or regulated prayer for everybody, wherever they are at any time in history. And that's all we have today. So this is when it comes from. We're talking about 2,500 years ago. So although it is more recent in Jewish history, it's still a significant amount of time in terms of known human history. And this is a very very important part of our prayer. It's formulated in a very specific pattern, which is the general pattern of prayer is Shevach Bakasha Hodah, which is praise of Hashem, then request of Hashem, and then thanksgiving. So it starts off with three blessings of praise, then it ends with three blessings of thanksgiving, or in that milieu. And there are 13 intermediate brachas, which are supplication and request as well. And all the Shmona Esreis are structured as such. The only thing that's different on the Shabbos and Yom Tov is that instead of the 13 Bakashas, the 13 requests in the middle, there's a switch to what's called Kedusha Asiyah. I'm talking about the holiness of the day, because on Shabbos and Yom Tov, we don't express personal physical requests on those days, so that is supplanted. But the Shevach and the Hodah, the beginning and the end, remain in place. That's the general Shmona Esrei. And now we learn some of the halachas that relate to it as well. We're told that as we say in Eicha, Shifchi Kamaim Libeich Noichach Pnei Hashem, we pour out our heart like water in front of the God. That means to say that we need to be in the right way, our mind, our mouth, and our body needs to be in the right way to the correct perspective in front of the Almighty. So a few basic questions when it comes to intent. What should I think before I start the davening? So Kitzur points out that one should consider the power and grandeur of Hashem and allow it to wash away the human frailties and all the things we say we need or really want in life, because we understand what the real significance, what really matters in life. What should I be focused on when I'm saying the Amidah, when I'm actually saying the words? So it is based on the pasuk in Tehillim, Tachin libam takshiv oznecha, prepare your hearts and then listen with your ears. That particularly during the first bracha and the end of every bracha, one should have focus on what one is saying. What am I meaning to say? Not esoteric meanings, Kabbalistic ideas. What am I actually saying? And as we go through life, organically, we express ourselves. We understand the words in different ways. And that's why there's two poles, essentially, of the creation of Tfilah, was the organic expression of Avos Tiknum, of how the greats of our nation expressed davening in an organic way. And then Keneged Tividim Tiknum, when Anshei Knesset HaGdolah formulated the prayer, they formulated it around the Korbanos, with the stricture and the structure that associates with those there with that service. And therefore it has this, on the one hand, structure of words, but the organic ability to be able to feel and understand based on my life experience, which continues to change the meaning within that as well. So I should be focused on what the words are saying. How do I get there? Hebrew is not my first language necessarily. So the Kitzur says there are so many Siddurim which are printed in with German translations today. Now, of course, he's talking in the 19th century today. Whichever country you're in, there is always a Siddur which is printed with translations in the language that you find yourself in, and of course, annotations and explanations. If it really matters to you, buy one and learn it and appreciate what one's saying, because one does what one cares about. And so if one would get all kinds of extra things around holiday seasons and Thanksgivings and all types of holidays for ancillary needs, then surely something which makes a really big difference in understanding what one's saying should be a priority in terms of this. It's so easily accessible today. Now, what happens if I didn't understand what I'm saying in a particular section? So I just don't get what the words mean. I know the translation, but what does it actually mean? So in that case, if one's not able to do that, one should focus on humbling thoughts. Think about how people are here today, gone tomorrow. What's really left after us? Life is so fast and fleeting. Those kind of thoughts are the humbling type of thoughts that are appropriate for prayer, even if I'm not fully understanding the words as well. What happens if another line of thought comes in? I start figuring out my schedule. I start working out my commute. I start figuring out all these different things. What should I do? Says the Kitzur, wait. Identify the fact that this is an extraneous thought and allow it to go out. Allow it, don't fight it, but allow it to go out, and then refocus on the Shemona Esrei itself. Now, we move on to our second concept. This concept is timing. So the background over here is that these organic supplications from the before the times of Anshei Knesset HaGdolah were formulated and regulated into the times of the Korbanos. The Korbanos had very specific times. The Tomit Shel Shachar, the sacrifice that was brought every single morning, was brought at specific timing, and so with the Adnun, and so with the Evarim, the burning of the limbs, which was done in the evening. So therefore, when is the best time to say the davening? The best time to do it is what's called Yirei Ucha Im Shemesh, Tehillim Ein Beis, which is as the sun rises. That's what we call Kevasikin, that is the best time, and great reward is promised to people who make an effort to do that. But when is the earliest? Let's say I can't do it at Vasikin. So in a Bidi Eved situation, in a situation which is post facto, not optimum, a person is allowed to daven from Alois HaShachar. This does not help on a fixed basis for Kriyas Shema. So that's going to be a problem for the Kriyas Shema putting Geula next to Tefillah. But in terms of the davening, when one's in a Bidi Eved situation, one can technically do it from the dawn, which is already 72 minutes earlier. When is the latest I may do davening until? So one can do that up till 4 relative hours in the day, which is a third of the day. We talked about measuring the relative hours when we learned the halachas of Kriyas Shema, how we divide that. Usually it's in the 10s to 11s in America, so it's somewhere like 10:30, varies around that area. Now, I've heard that I can really go until midday. Is that true? So the truth is that there is a dispute between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as to when Tefillah of the morning can be said based on when the Korbanos in the morning, the Korban Tamid Shel Shachar, goes until. We paskin that it's up till 4 hours. However, if a person didn't do that, then one is still allowed for another 2 hours till Chatzoy, 6 hours into the day, to pray. But it is as if one davened, but just called Tefillah Shelo Bizmano, not at the correct time, and one has lost something. If one goes beyond 6 hours for that, then at that point in time, the Kitzur points out it's what's called based on Koheles, Uvas Lo Yechol Liskon. A crooked thing cannot be corrected. You've lost your davening that day. There is a notion of Tashlumim, but we'll discuss that at a later time. Move to our third concept today, and that is the concept of position. So a few basic questions. How should my feet go? The answer is next to each other. Why? Because that is like the angels, Raglehem Regel Yeshara, their feet were placed together. It looks like they had one foot, so we act in an angelic fashion by having our feet together. That means heel next to heel, toe next to toe. How should my head go? The head should be bent down slightly, not neck up, nose up, bent down slightly. Why? This is an expression of humility. How should my hands go? Either holding the sitter or over one's heart, right over left. Usually if one's doing things with one's hands, one's getting distracted, any amount of bandwidth one is using for other things is bandwidth that one is not using to focus on what one is saying. It is also, another reason for this, is because it's an expression of humility. It looks like a person who's begging at the door, and that's what we are. We're begging for our life, we're begging for success, and we should act like we're begging. How should my eyes go? They should be closed or they should be looking at the sitter. Those are the two options. Not looking elsewhere, closed or looking at the sitter. And this, why is this? This is a reason of focus. It's interesting that the Kitzur does not mention the amazing sitter apps that one can get on one's devices. I imagine that if looking around is an issue, then looking at the single most distracting device ever created should also be an issue as well. And you know what? The old sitters still work. That you can't scroll, you can't light up the screen, but they work a whole lot better than a device. And if one's in a shul, there's no excuse not to use a sitter. If one has to pull out a device, there's so many other things and notifications and pings that go on, completely unnecessary. And if one's on the road, it's very nice to have a sitter in one's on an app. But you know, the good old Mincha Maariv booklet that goes in the wallet works just as well and even better. So it's a good idea to focus on that. How loud should I be? One should whisper so one can hear oneself, but not loud enough that one's neighbor can hear it. That's quite a hard thing. I know that for some people, whispering is a very tough business, but it should be enough that one's so activating one's lips. One's not just murmuring it in one's head, but also not allowed to do enough to distract other people. Then, why is this? We learn this from Chana. It says about Chana when she prayed in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, Rak sefaseh na'ois v'kola li'yishma. Her lips are moving, they're articulating, but her voice was not heard. Can I lean on something? Answer is no. Why not? Because every part of one's energy is being used to focus on Hashem and what the conversation that one's supposed to be having. But if one is leaning, then an element of one's energy is being used to keep balance and to ensure that what one is leaning on does not shift. How much leaning is considered leaning and how much is just sort of keeping, you know, balance or anchored? So if the item upon which I am leaning can be removed and I will not fall, so then in that case it's not considered leaning. But if I will fall, then that's considered leaning and one should not be doing this as well. What can I hold when I'm davening? I can only hold a sitter and a machzor, not a baby, not another book, not something precious, not a phone. These are all things that I'm not allowed to because it's going to be distracting me from my kavana, because lest I drop it, and therefore extra energy is being used for this as well. We see from halacha the sensitivity to how much energy is invested in all these things. Finally, fourth and last concept that we're going to deal with today, and that is the concept of direction. We're told that the Beis Hamikdash is called Tal Piyos. In Shir HaShirim, in the fourth parak, we hear K'migdal David Tzavareich, like the neck of David is your neck. Bonoi built for Talpios. Why is it called Talpios? It's a tail, it's the heel, Shekol Pios, Ponim Elav, that all mouths, tail Pios, it's the mountain of mouths, all mouths focus on that. And so, therefore, what direction should I face? The answer is one should always face Israel, not east. It's true in America and Europe, they faced east, but in South Africa, they faced north, and in Asia, they faced west, and in Lebanon, in Iraq and Syria, they faced south when the many Jews used to live there. So it's not about east, it's about facing Israel. What happens if I am in Israel? Then you face Yerushalayim. What happens if I'm in Yerushalayim? You face the Beis HaMikdash. What happens if I'm in or around the Beis HaMikdash? Then I face the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is why at the Kotel, one should be facing slightly to the left, because the Kodesh HaKadoshim is to the left, not to the front. What if I cannot face that way? So if one should turn one's face, so for instance, let's say I'm in a vehicle that is going in not the direction of Israel, and I'm not able to stand up, then one should turn one's face the correct way if it's not dangerous. Obviously, if one's driving, that's not the optimal way to do things. But let's say if that's not possible, one turns one's heart to pray in this situation. What happens if I started davening the wrong way, and then I realized midway that I'm facing the wrong direction? So one does not move one's feet in the middle, while one should move one's face and certainly one's heart in the right direction as well. What should be the direction when within a shul? So the truth is, one should be closest to the wall. And this is from, as we learn about Chizkiyahu HaMelech, it says when Chizkiyahu was in a deathly, terrifying situation, it says, Vayasev Chizkiyahu Panav Elakir Vayispalel, he turned his face toward the wall and daven. So one should try to daven by the wall. It doesn't mean to say being nasty, to kick somebody else out of his seat because one wants to get there. It doesn't mean to say overcrowding somebody. This is if there are is the possibility in a menshelech way of being able to do this. What happens if there's something in the way? So if there's something in the way between me and the wall, it is a problem. As long as that item is 4 tvachim wide and 10 tvachim high and is a movable item. But a fixed item or a small item doesn't make a difference. But we'd like sometimes there's chairs just strewn around a hall. One should try to daven without chairs between oneself and the wall. It's distracting, and therefore one will lose on kavana. What happens if there's no alternative? So in that case, one can daven with one's eyes closed or just look at the sitter. What happens if there's a picture or stained glass in front of me? Then it's best not to daven in front of that picture or stained glass. First of all, because it looks like one's davening to it, and also one will get distracted. But if it's not possible to move, that's the only place one has. And again, one has to ask what not possible means, because usually there are possibilities. But let's say there's absolutely no possible davening with a minion and not being in front of this. It's the entire wall. Then one can close one's eyes and daven. What happens if there is a mirror in front of me? Same problem. It looks like I'm davening to myself. That's a very negative thing. And therefore, in that case, it is not enough. I'm not able to daven with my eyes closed even. That is completely incorrect. And so a person should therefore daven. Daven not facing the mirror, even if it's the wrong direction, so that one's not facing the mirror as well. What happens if I'm in an open area? So one should not daven in an open area, let's say a field, out on a hike. One should not daven in an area without borders. This is because one will get distracted. That's one reason. The other reason is because people will end up bumping into you because you're in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing to stop anybody interrupting you, and therefore your davening will be interrupted. What about if the area has a border? Let's say my yard or my patio has a border to it, but there is no roof. That's not an issue. It's still considered bordered, even if there's no roof as well. And in fact, sometimes having the ability to look at the skyscape is something which can provide a huge amount of humility and context as well. What happens if I'm on a trip and this is the only option? I'm out, I'm on a hike, and I'm going to miss davening if I don't do this. So first, I plan a little bit better ahead. But if it's not possible, then one should go to an area that's more secluded. Let's say there's trees so that one is not going to be distracted, number one, and not be interrupted, number two, as well. With this, we conclude the first part of dealing with the Shmoneh Esrei. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.